Sam dragged himself out of the taxi with a tired sigh. By the time he'd made it through about 1,000 reiterations of, "I'm sorry, officer, I didn't see who beat those guys to a pulp after they shot me," and the ER doctor stitched up the deep gash in his side, it was late enough that he might as well have stayed the night in the hospital. But frankly, he hated hospitals, and he'd had enough trouble sleeping in his own bed sometimes. Sleeping in a lumpy hospital bed was straight up not happening. So he paid the cabbie and trudged up to his front door. He was in the process of fumbling for his keys when the door opened and a metal arm pulled him inside. Startled, Sam very nearly fell against Bucky's chest, but he didn't resist. "You're supposed to be at the hospital," Bucky grumbled. He pulled Sam clear so that he could shut and lock the door, and Sam leaned against the wall, blinking against the suddenly too bright light inside the house. "I was," he said. "I left." Bucky narrowed his eyes at Sam, unamused. "I'm fine," Sam assured, pushing himself away from the wall. "They gave me a few stitches and some pain pills. Now all I need is some sleep." Sam headed determinedly for his bedroom, and Bucky followed him. Sam could all but feel Bucky breathing down his neck, as though Bucky expected him to fall and require catching at any moment. It both made Sam feel warm inside and paranoid that he might, in fact, fall over at any moment. They made it to the bedroom without incident, and Sam fell into his bed without bothering to undress. He could regret sleeping in his clothes later, but at that moment, he was too tired to care. Sam's entire body felt warm and heavy, and his mind went lax as he hovered at the edge of sleep. He was just about to let go when he felt one of his shoes leave his foot. He cracked his eyes open and craned his neck around to look at Bucky. "What are you doing?" he asked. His tone was distinctly accusatory, despite the thickness of sleep in it. "Helping you to bed," Bucky answered, narrowing his eyes at Sam, as though concerned that his brain functions had been damaged. Sam blinked at him a few times. "Why?" Bucky shrugged, focused on untying the laces on Sam's other shoe. "You did it for me." Sam considered that for a moment, then dropped his head back down onto the bed. "Whatever," he mumbled. Bucky finished removing Sam's shoes and set them aside. He then lifted Sam, as though he weighed nothing, and set him back down so that Sam's head was actually on top of his pillow. Sam hadn't even realized that he'd collapsed across the bed horizontally. Sam made an undignified noise of surprise when he felt himself being lifted, but Bucky's touch was surprisingly gentle, and laying on the pillow was much more comfortable, so he didn't resist. However, when Bucky pulled the blanket up to Sam's chin and literally smoothed it down over him, Sam couldn't resist. He forced his eyes open enough to narrow them at Bucky. "Were you worried about me?" he asked. Neither of them had bothered to turn on the bedroom light, so Sam could only see a vague outline of Bucky thanks to the sliver of the hall light that was filtering past the partially closed door. It wasn't enough to read Bucky's expression, but it was enough to see him pause, still hunched over the bed. "You got shot," Bucky said, his voice flat. "Only a little," Sam protested. He could hear himself as though his own voice was coming from very far off, and it sounded weirdly petulant. "You got shot way worse." "I also heal faster," Bucky pointed out. He stood, moving away from the bed. "Yeah, whatever. Show off," Sam muttered. He tried to roll over onto his stomach, but made the mistake of rolling in the direction of his wounded side. He grunted in frustration, but didn't bother trying again. "They seriously drugged you up, didn't they?" Bucky sounded faintly amused, though his voice was partially obscured by the soft drag of chair legs over the carpet. Bucky was dragging the chair that Sam kept in his room, for no real purpose, usually it ended up covered in dirty laundry, over to the bed. "You have your own room," Sam pointed out as he watched Bucky plop himself down in the chair. "I'm good here," Bucky said, ostensibly making himself comfortable. Sam shifted, turning enough to squish his face into the pillow beneath his head. "You were so worried about me," he mumbled, grinning dopily. "Go to sleep, Sam." Sam couldn't see it, but he could have sworn he heard a smile in Bucky's voice as he drifted off to sleep. Rain and wind pelted Sam from all sides. He was weightless, held up by the span of his outstretched wings. The rain was like a million BB bullets, sharp and stinging. He'd had this dream before. Riley was somewhere to his left, laughing in the wind. He thrilled in the fight, and so did Sam, despite the wind and the rain and the dizzying height. It was like nothing else, like being in a world of their own, like the purest form of freedom. Sam turned his head to catch a glimpse of Riley. He knew he shouldn't. He knew how this dream ended. He thought, for just a second, that he could see the flash of Riley's smile through the driving rain. But then there was a burst of light, bright and orange and far too sharp. And then Sam was falling. He couldn't move, couldn't breathe. Riley's horrified face hovering above him as Sam's wings failed and he plummeted downward. Sam was caught halfway between consciousness and the dream, only aware of the horrible falling sensation and the pain in his side. He was falling, falling, and his wings were gone, and he couldn't breathe. Something touched his shoulder, something that Sam dimly registered as a hand, and he let out a sob of relief before he could stop himself. Because he wasn't falling. The hand was heavy and firm, grounding him, rooting him to the bed that he could now feel, too soft and suffocating beneath him. He reached out blindly, finding the arm that the hand was attached to and clinging to him, sucking in huge gasps for air. The dream had been vivid and real, and it took Sam several minutes to sort out the lingering phantom sensations of the dream and the reality of the waking world. The whole time, Bucky didn't move. He remained half-kneeling on the bed, his hand on Sam's shoulder, while Sam clung to his arm. He waited patiently while Sam pulled himself together again. "You with me?" Bucky asked at length, his voice pitched low, like he was trying to be non-threatening. Sam nodded, forcing himself to let go of Bucky's arm. "Just a dream," he mumbled. His breathing was slowly returning to normal, and he squinted in Bucky's direction, forcing his eyes to focus. Bucky looked disheveled, and a pillow and blanket had ended up in the chair he'd been occupying, as though he'd fallen asleep there. He'd abandoned the chair, however, and he had one knee on the bed, as though he'd launched himself onto it in his rush to get to Sam. The whites of Bucky's eyes were glinting in the dim light that filtered into the room, and his metal hand was clenched in the folds of the blanket. He looked as unsettled as Sam felt. "You should go to bed," Sam said, ignoring the desperate desire to not be alone that was curling in the pit of his stomach. He'd dealt with this before. He'd been dealing with it for a long time now, and he'd done it alone so far. There was no reason for Bucky, who still had a lot more recovering to do than Sam had ever had to face, to be sitting up in a chair all night, or watching Sam fall apart. "No," Bucky said simply. He pulled back a little, giving Sam some space, but he didn't get off the bed. It seemed that as far as Bucky was concerned, that closed the matter, because he changed the subject. "It helped when I touched you." It wasn't a question, though there was an undercurrent of uncertainty to it. Sam sighed, too tired to resist, and gave in. "Yeah," Sam said, In the dream, I was falling. The touch grounded me. Bucky nodded decisively. "I'll stay," he said. Without any further discussion, Bucky kicked off his boots and lay down on the bed beside Sam. He lay close, within easy reach, though he was careful to not actually touch Sam. Sam lay back against the pillows and shifted onto his side, enough to see Bucky better. "Seriously?" he asked. There was something about the way he was laying, enveloped in the darkness, that made it impossible to speak at normal volume. "Do you want me to leave?" The question was simple and straightforward, and Sam's reaction was all gut instinct. "No," he said too quickly, before his mind could process what he was going to say. Bucky just nodded and squished the pillow he was laying on to a more comfortable angle. After a moment, Sam offered him part of the blanket. Within moments, they were settled, both comfortably cocooned under the blanket, and Bucky's right arm was extended just enough for his knuckles to brush against Sam's arm. Sam fell asleep again quickly, feeling like, for once, he was on solid ground. Sam had no memory of waking up, or of answering the phone. It was just there, pressed to his ear, while Steve's voice, all tightly controlled anger, assaulted him.
"Are you okay?"
Sam blinked groggily, squinting at the clock, but his eyes didn't want to focus enough to make out the numbers. "It is 8:00 in the morning, Steve," he grumbled. Now that he was awake, he was becoming uncomfortably aware of his throbbing side, and he figured that if he was due for another dose of pain pills, it probably wasn't that early. But he didn't retract his complaint.
"Yes, well, you want to know how my day started? Natasha ate the last of my Cheerios and informed me that you were in the hospital."
If Sam had been more awake, or Steve sounded less upset, Sam would have laughed. "I never said I was in the hospital," Sam protested. "I told her I'd been shot." Steve's appalled silence was response enough, and Sam groaned, pushing himself up so that he could speak more clearly without the pillow obstructing his mouth. "I'm fine," he said, stressing the word. "It's just a graze. They stitched me up and sent me home."
"Are you alone?"
Sam's dazed mind was baffled by the question. Why wouldn't he be alone? And why should Steve care? Except, before he could answer, the bed beside him shifted, and a metal hand lightly touched his back, accompanied by Bucky's sleep-deepened voice mumbling Sam's name. Sam nearly jumped out of his skin. He remembered, hazily, the events that had led to Bucky being in his bed. But remembering was entirely different from being reminded in an inappropriately intimate way that had no actual bearing on what had happened. But Sam was pulled forcefully away from those thoughts as Steve continued talking in his ear.
"I can be there in 2 hours,
Steve said. There was a hesitation in his voice, but the offer was genuine.
"You shouldn't be alone."
Sam's mouth gaped open. Both he and Steve had been soldiers for far too long to take a minor graze that seriously. And yet Steve was willing to drop everything, probably important Avengers things, to come babysit Sam while he healed. It was ridiculously touching, and for a moment, Sam almost said yes. But Bucky shifted again beside him, sitting up fully. Sam turned his head automatically so his eyes could track Bucky's movements. And in the pale morning light that filtered in around the edge of Sam's curtains, he could see how Bucky's hair stuck up in all directions, before Bucky ran a hand through it in an attempt to smooth it down. And maybe Sam didn't need another dose of medication, because either those pills had really screwed him over, or he was legitimately finding Bucky adorable at that moment. In either way, he was royally fucked.
Sam?
Steve prompted, when Sam was silent too long. And Sam snapped back to attention, ignoring the quizzical look Bucky gave him.
No, man, don't worry about it, Sam said quickly. Seriously, I'm fine. It's no big deal.
Steve still sounded displeased, but most of his anger had dissipated.
You should at least have your mom or someone check in on you, he said reasonably.
Yeah, I'll get right on telling her about this, Sam said. He didn't mean it, but he knew that Steve had the resources, Natasha, to track down his mom's number and tell her himself, so he figured it was better to just agree to it. But not until a decent hour.
Sam, it's 8 o'clock,
Steve pointed out, a hint of humor creeping into his voice. Yeah, well, I got shot last night. I think I'm entitled to sleep in just this once, Sam grumbled, and Steve actually laughed. It was a relief to hear. Seriously, Steve, just relax, Sam insisted, pushing himself out of bed. Because despite what he had told Steve, he was now wide awake, and he was pretty sure going back to sleep wouldn't be happening. You can do the whole hovering and making sure I'm fine thing when I'm up there next week. Sam had been focused on trying to find clean clothes when he said the words, but he winced as soon as they left his mouth. Bucky was still reclining on the bed, watching him with a carefully blank expression. Bucky, who Sam had forgotten to tell he was planning to visit Steve. Sam held Bucky's gaze for a moment, trapped in his mistake, explanations and apologies already on his lips. When Steve's voice pulled him back to the conversation he was already having.
You're still planning to come?
Steve sounded dubious, and the worry was back in his voice.
Of course I'm still coming, Sam said, his voice a little too bright, too enthusiastic.
He forcibly pulled his eyes away from Bucky to resume his search for non-bloodstained clothes.
You promised me a personal all-access tour of Avengers Tower. No way in hell I'm passing that up.
It wouldn't hurt to postpone a few weeks,
Steve tried. There was something like disappointment in his voice that made Sam all the more glad to cut him off. Nope, I've already got the tickets, he said firmly. Don't back out on me now, Rogers. Steve chuckled a little and gave in.
Fine. Now go back to sleep, Steve told him.
Yes, sir, Sam answered with a crooked grin. The grin faded, however, as he let the phone drop onto the foot of the bed. Natalia, who was sleeping there, glowered at him and tucked her tail over her nose. Bucky didn't move. You're going to New York? Bucky's voice was as bland as his face. There was something wrong about the way he lay in the bed, propped up on his right arm, with a blanket pooling around his waist, that was sending very confused signals to Sam's brain. It wasn't really a concrete thing until I bought the tickets yesterday. It was a weak explanation, and Sam knew it. I was going to tell you over dinner. I don't care, Bucky said. Too casual to be truth. You could come, Sam offered. You can't keep avoiding him forever. Bucky's face twitched as he sat up, turning his back to Sam as he sat on the edge of the bed and reached for his boots. No, he said. Sam wasn't sure which part Bucky was saying no to exactly, but his tone made it clear he would not be vacationing in New York with Sam. Sam sighed. He was tired in a way that had nothing to do with the throbbing in his side. I'm taking a shower, he declared, snatching the nearest available clothes and turning on his heel. Bucky just grunted and let him go. Bucky went back to haunting the house. Sam knew he was around, but Bucky avoided him. Bucky didn't show up at dinner time, or join Sam on the couch to read or watch TV after dinner.
Sam woke up at the time that they would normally go on their run together, hoping to at least catch sight of Bucky, but Bucky had already left. After 2 days, Sam went back to work, unable to bear sitting around the house any longer. It was frustrating, but Bucky had been professionally trained in how to be a ghost for a long time, and as badly as they needed to talk, as long as Bucky wanted to avoid him, Sam could not pin him down. In fact, the only thing that could draw Bucky out was the nightmares. They hit every night, leaving Sam drenched in sweat, adrenaline surging through his veins. And every night, Bucky was there to ground him. Sam didn't know if Bucky heard his distress and came into his room, or if he hovered in the room, waiting for the nightmare to wake Sam up. Or hell, if Bucky waited until Sam fell asleep to just crawl into Sam's bed and stay the night, nightmares or no. But every time, without fail, when Sam woke up shaking and gasping for air, Bucky's hand would land gingerly on his shoulder. At first it was just a hand brushing against Sam's arm, reminding him of where he was and that he wasn't alone. But then it was Bucky's arm around his waist, and then Bucky's legs tangled up with his, and Bucky's breath tickling the hairs at the nape of his neck. Sam wanted to talk about it. He needed them to talk about it. But in the moment, with a dream still fresh in his mind, he could never resist Bucky's gentle pull back into the warmth and comfort of the bed. He couldn't bring himself to say a word as he lay with Bucky pressed up against his back. And by the time the dream had faded back to the back of his mind, sleep always pulled him away again. In the morning, when Sam woke up, Bucky was always gone. A week passed, and then it was the last day before Sam's flight to New York. He decided to take the afternoon off after getting his stitches taken out. He told himself it was because he still needed to pack and make sure the house was in order before he left. It wasn't at all because he hoped to catch Bucky unaware by the change in routine. When Sam got home, there was a half-eaten sandwich on the table, still warm from the toaster. "You're acting like a child," Sam informed the house at large, knowing Bucky could hear him. "Get your ass back in here." It took several minutes, but Bucky reluctantly emerged from his room. He held Natalia to his chest protectively, as though she could ward Sam off, and there was a distinctly petulant tilt to his lips. Sam leaned back against the counter and crossed his arm. Bucky just stood there, staring at him, waiting expectantly. Sam was forcefully reminded of the first night Bucky had appeared on his stoop, when they'd staged a similar standoff. Except, this time, Sam wasn't intimidated, and he wasn't going to wait for Bucky to speak. "I'm leaving tomorrow," Sam said, starting with the easy part. "I'm only going to be gone for the weekend, so I'll be back Monday." Bucky nodded stiffly. His face was carefully blank, but his arms tightened around the cat until she meowed at him in protest and escaped the circle of his arms to sit regally on Bucky's shoulder instead. After a long silence, Sam sighed. "What is this, Bucky?" he asked with a helpless shrug. "I thought things were going good. But you have to talk to me. You have to tell me what you're thinking." Bucky stared at him, his face not quite blank, as a thousand micro-expressions flitted across it, too fast for Sam to read. Then Bucky carefully and deliberately lifted the cat off his shoulder and set her down on the floor. "Have fun in New York," he said, and turned away. Sam reacted before he could think it through, a hot burst of anger exploding in his chest. He pushed away from the counter to follow Bucky. "Don't walk away from me," he called after Bucky, much louder than was necessary, though he wasn't quite shouting. "We're having a discussion here." Neither of them had made it more than a few steps, but those words made Bucky stop and whirl back around so fast it would have given a lesser man whiplash. "You're not Steve," Bucky snapped. His hands, metal and flesh, had clenched into tight fists,
and Sam could see a muscle in his jaw twitching as Bucky grit his teeth.
Sam blinked, the anger gone as soon as it had come. "No, I'm not," he answered carefully. He kept moving, one slow step at a time, gradually closing the distance between them. "You didn't go to Steve for help. You came to me. You came here. I'm trying to help you. So tell me, what do you want?"
Bucky glared at him, his eyes hard and cold. Sam knew it was stupid to push. He could see the defensive tension in Bucky's shoulders, the subtle threat in Bucky's tightened fists. But maybe he'd given Bucky too much space. Maybe that was the problem. So he kept moving closer anyway. "What do you want from me, Bucky?" he asked. He kept his voice low, calm and non-threatening, but he didn't back off. "What do you want from us, from this? What do you want from life?"
"I don't know," Bucky snapped, the words bitten out like nails over gravel.
"Well, you need to decide," Sam insisted, "because you can't keep doing this to yourself, and you can't keep doing it to me."
"I don't know," Bucky said again, verging on a shout.
"You can't keep haunting my house. You're not a ghost anymore. You're not Hydra's anymore. You need to..." Sam was almost close enough to touch Bucky. He wasn't sure if he should, but he wanted to. He didn't get the chance. Before Sam could finish his sentence, a metal fist twisted in the front of his t-shirt and slammed him back against the wall. Then Bucky crowded in close, and for a second, Sam was certain Bucky was about to rip out his throat. But Bucky's hand stayed clenched in his shirt, keeping him pinned to the wall, while Bucky leaned in and kissed him. The kiss was rough and hard, and just this edge of violence. Bucky's lips were surprisingly soft, and he'd missed, hitting Sam's lips off-center and from the wrong angle. But there was feeling there, anger and frustration, and fear that had been pent up for God only knew how long, but also hunger and need, and something almost hopeful. Sam responded automatically, one of his hands lifted to cover Bucky's metal one, where it held onto him, while the other pushed back some of Bucky's hair, cupping his face and pulling him closer all at once. The kiss was short and burning, suffocating and not enough. It ended as abruptly as it began. Bucky pulled back, a furrow between his eyes, and his lips twisted in a way that spoke of confusion and uncertainty that didn't match the obvious want Sam could feel between his legs. And then Bucky was gone. Leaving so fast, he failed to close the front door completely behind him. Sam was left staring after him, breathless and more frustrated than ever. Bucky didn't come back. It was the first time in a week that Sam woke up in the middle of the night alone. Sam waited for him as long as he could the next morning, but eventually he couldn't wait any longer, or he would miss his flight. So he sighed and left a note on the table. "Stop disappearing on me. At least let me know you're alive. We are going to talk about this when I get back." He placed a phone on the paper next to the second part of his message. It was about time Bucky started communicating better. When Sam turned on his phone as he was getting off the plane at JFK, he had a text message. It read simply,
"I'm alive."
Sam snorted and texted back,
"Smartass."
"All right, so where's the bowling alley and the gift shop?" Sam teased.
"Bowling alley is on the third floor, gift shop on the first by the exit," Steve answered, totally deadpan. He held it for all of 15 seconds before they both broke out laughing. Steve typed his passcode into the keypad, to access the private elevator that would take them to the upper level of Avengers Tower, where the private residences were. Steve had already shown Sam around the lower levels, which were populated by offices and labs utilized by Stark Industries, and the new private reboot of S.H.I.E.L.D. that Stark was putting together. "My floor, please, Jarvis," Steve said politely as they entered the elevator.
"Of course, Captain Rogers,"
the equally polite British voice came from the ceiling, though Sam couldn't see any speakers. Sam jumped and swore at the voice, though Steve had told him about Jarvis before, so he really shouldn't have been surprised. Steve grinned, patting Sam's shoulder in consolation. "You'll get used to him," Steve assured. "Well, if your crusty ass did," Sam muttered in response, which only made Steve laugh harder. "Seriously, though, this place is..." "Overwhelming," Steve supplied. "Kind of a letdown," Sam countered. "I mean, seriously, you're still using elevators? No, like, short-range teleporters?" "Tony's been busy," Steve shrugged. "And you do not want to see what happened when he tested the prototype," Natasha added. Sam had hardly noticed that the elevator had stopped, but Clint and Natasha joined them, holding water bottles and wearing exercise clothes. Sam caught a glimpse of the floor they'd just left before the doors closed. It was the biggest gym he'd ever seen. Clint shuddered. "I'm still traumatized from that," he agreed. Natasha gave Sam a high five by way of greeting and leaned against the wall next to him. "Did Steve tell you about the bowling alley?" she asked.
"I've heard rumors. Why, you want to play a game?"
"I do," Clint piped up.
"No," Natasha and Steve said together.
"Bowl a perfect game one time," Clint muttered.
"You cheated," Natasha said blandly.
"He cheated so badly that he shorted out the power to the entire floor," Steve explained. "We still have no idea how he did it."
"I'm feeling so attacked right now," Clint complained. But before the conversation could devolve any further, the elevator door opened again, and Steve led Sam off. They waved farewell to Clint and Natasha, promising to see them later.
Overall, it was a great night. Steve gave Sam some time to settle into his guest room. Then they ended up ordering pizza and playing video games on Steve's massive flat screen for most of the night. Steve was embarrassed by the television and by the fact that he had an entire floor of the tower for his apartment. He explained quickly that Stark had had the apartment decorated and furnished before Steve had moved. However, Steve was surprisingly good at Mario Kart, which he admitted was his favorite of the games that the rest of the team had introduced him to. After several hours of pizza, beer, and smack talk, Sam sank back against the couch cushions, warm and aching from so much laughter. Steve slumped next to him, just close enough for their shoulders to touch. Sam watched Steve, who looked more relaxed than Sam had ever seen him, all loose-limbed and smiling. "You look good, Steve," Sam said. Sam was entirely willing to blame the beers and the ridiculously comfortable couch for his lack of control over his tongue. "Happy, I mean," he clarified. Steve tilted his head at Sam, his smile turning bemused.
"I am. I'm good," Steve said, though he paused before completing the sentence.
"That's not a bad thing," Sam assured him, nudging Steve's shoulder. "You're allowed to be happy. But that doesn't have to mean everything's fixed," Sam added, because the smile was fading from Steve's eyes, and Sam knew that feeling all too well.
"You always know just what to say," Steve teased, but his eyes were serious. "How do you do that?" Sam snorted and shook his head.
"Huh, dumb luck," he dismissed.
Steve let his head roll back on the couch to watch Sam, his eyes lazy and half-lidded.
worn out.
"I'm glad I met you, Sam," he murmured.
Sam blinked at him. Unlike Sam, Steve could not blame the beer. And Sam was very much distracted by the line of heat running up his body from where Steve's body brushed against him, from knee to shoulder.
"Well," Steve said after a minute, breaking the contact as he heaved himself up off the couch. "I'm going to turn in. You good?"
"Yeah," Sam confirmed, trying to ignore the ache that the loss of contact caused.
"I'm good. Night."
Steve responded in kind, collecting their empty beer bottles and depositing them in the kitchen on his way to his room. Sam stayed where he was for several more minutes, listening to Steve check the locks on the door and windows, even though they were electronically controlled by Jarvis, and summoning the energy to head towards his own waiting bed. When he finally did crawl between the sheets, he checked his phone absently before setting it on the bedside table. He had a text message that read,
"If you have a nightmare, call me."
The next morning, Sam and Steve toured New York. They went for a jog in Central Park, visited Steve's favorite diner, and then Steve took Sam for a tour of his old neighborhood in Brooklyn.
"Come on," Sam wheedled as he and Steve crossed the lobby of Avengers Tower on their way back to Steve's floor for lunch.
"You've got to let me see some of your sketches. It's not like I haven't already seen your work. They had some on display at the Smithsonian."
"So you don't need to see my sketchbook," Steve argued, a distinctive pink tinge to his cheeks.
"Oh, no.
It's not the same. I want to see your current stuff," Sam insisted.
"Hey, Cap."
It was a voice that Sam knew well from the news and various celebrity gossip shows. Tony Stark was strolling across the lobby toward them, a tall man in Air Force blues at his side.
"Tony," Steve greeted, stopping to allow the other men to reach them. "How is Burma?"
"Wet and boring," Tony said, waving a hand dismissively.
"Hey, look, the new guy."
Tony grinned at Sam in a way that made Sam feel vaguely as though he was missing out on something.
"Sam, you know who Tony Stark is," Steve said, his tone polite, but filled with an overabundance of patience. "And this is..."
"Colonel Rhodes," Sam interrupted, grinning as he stepped forward to shake the colonel's hand.
"Wilson," Rhodey greeted, matching Sam's grin.
"It's good to see you. I heard about what you did in D.C. Good job."
"Thank you, sir."
It had been a few years since Sam had seen Colonel Rhodes. He looked a little more tired, a little grayer around the edges. Tony had his eyes narrowed at Rhodey.
"You've been holding out on me," he accused.
Rhodey rolled his eyes. "Tony, you knew I worked on the EXO Falcon project. You did too, remember?"
"Yes, Rhodey, I'm aware of that. What I didn't know is that you're all best buds with Cap's new sidekick."
"Tony!"
"Hey, wait a minute.
Sidekick?"
Steve, Rhodey, and Sam all protested at once. Tony raised an eyebrow at them, and Rhodey turned back to Sam, pointedly ignoring Tony.
"So, how long are you in town for? I still owe you a drink," Rhodey said.
"No way, it's my turn," Sam protested. "I'm here until Sunday."
"Great," Rhodey nodded, shaking Sam's hand again.
"We'll set something up. Tony, we're 2 hours late for a meeting."
Rhodey nodded politely to Steve as he dragged Tony off.
"So, you know Colonel Rhodes?" Steve said, as they resumed heading for the elevators.
"Yeah, he oversaw all of our flight tests. He's a great guy," Sam agreed.
Sam spent the entire ride to the upper floors telling Steve stories from his training days, about the time he'd almost crashed the first time he'd taken the Falcon suit up, and how Colonel Rhodes had caught him in the War Machine armor,
and the time Riley had almost convinced Rhodes to let him try out the War Machine armor when they'd had a few too many drinks after they got off duty. Steve took them to one of the common floors instead of his private one, claiming that the common kitchen was better, and the adjacent entertainment room had a better selection of games to play. While Steve and Sam were fixing themselves lunch, Thor, who was somehow even more impressive in real life than on TV, wandered in. After they finished eating, Thor challenged Steve to a ping-pong match, which went disastrously. Natasha arrived just in time to see Steve accidentally put a ping-pong ball through the wall, and she suggested they try a quieter activity. After some enthusiastic debate, they pulled up Star Trek, the original series, on Netflix. Halfway through the pilot, Bruce Banner peeked in. Steve motioned for Bruce to join them, and he did, settling himself in a plush armchair. After that, it was only a matter of time until Clint appeared to plop himself in Natasha's lap. And finally, Tony arrived too. By the time they started the fourth episode, Clint and Natasha were tangled up together in one of the armchairs, while Clint braided Natasha's hair. Thor was sprawled out, taking up an entire couch. Tony was sitting on the floor, leaning against Bruce's chair, while they passed a tablet between them. Meanwhile, Sam and Steve were at the center of it all, settled comfortably on the love seat. It was nice. It was really nice. At some point, massive bowls of popcorn had appeared, and no one was sitting quietly. Clint and Tony, especially, were fond of yelling at the television, while Thor laughed uproariously at every joke. And no one could resist commenting on various aspects of the plots. When it came down to it, it was too good to last. Halfway through the fifth episode, everyone's phone started going off at once, and Sam watched as they all snapped into action around him. "Robots tearing up Park Avenue," Bruce read aloud, frowning at his tablet. "Looks like they're heading this way." "At least 30 of them, unknown origin," Natasha added, already standing, her movements dumping Clint unceremoniously off her lap. "No reported casualties yet, but they're doing a lot of property damage," Steve said, frowning unhappily. "Suit up," Clint muttered, turning off the television with a resigned sigh. "Sorry," Steve said apologetically to Sam as he stood. "Make yourself at home. Hopefully this won't take too long." And then they scattered, heading in different directions, presumably to gear up. Sam sat on the couch, twiddling his thumbs for a full 3 seconds. "Fuck this," he muttered, pushing himself up and heading in the direction Natasha had gone. He didn't have to go far to catch up with her. "Hey, Natasha, do you have some extra guns I can borrow?" Natasha narrowed her eyes at him, assessing him for a moment, then grinned. But before she could say anything, Tony interrupted. "I can do you one better," Tony said. "This way." He made an imperious gesture and didn't wait to see if Sam was following them. Tony led the way to the center of the tower and down a narrow flight of stairs. Sam followed him. Steve had left this part of the tower out of his tour. The landing at the bottom of the stairs led through a glass door into a massive and ridiculously cluttered lab. Wires and pieces of circuitry littered every flat surface, and 3 massive, one-armed robots buzzed around. It was a lot to take in, but Tony was walking quickly, and there was no time to slow down. "Here we go," Tony announced. They'd reached a section of the lab that was relatively clear, encircled by glass display cases. Several of the cases were empty, but the rest housed a variety of Iron Man suits. Tony bypassed the cases to what looked like a closet set in the wall beside them. "No way!" Sam exclaimed when he saw what Tony pulled out of the closet. "I thought the last one got destroyed in DC." He just barely restrained the urge to make actual grabby hands for the wings that Tony held out to him. "Yeah, well, I have a problem with letting things go. Ask my girlfriend." Tony waved it off. He handed over the wings and moved away into the open space in front of the display cases. I kept tinkering with it, even after they shut down the project. That one's a little more powerful than the one you're used to, but the controls are still basically the same. Come back later, and I'll let you play with the real toys. Sam was so busy strapping himself into the wings that he almost missed the pieces of armor flying across the room to attach themselves to Tony. "Don't forget this," Tony said, tossing Sam an earpiece. Moments later, they were both suited up, and Tony led the way out into the open sky. No matter how many times Sam flew, it still twisted his stomach into knots. It was terrifying and elating all at once. He drew in his wings, corkscrewing until he was high above the tower, and he let out an elated whoop.
"Playtime's over, Wilson," Tony reminded him wryly through the earpiece. "Time to get to work."
In seconds, they were hovering over Park Avenue, where no less than 30 20-foot robots appeared to be methodically stepping on every car they came across.
"Now that's just insulting," Tony complained.
"Any idea where they came from, Tony?"
Steve's voice came over the earpiece. When Sam flew lower to the ground, he could see that the rest of the team had arrived, along with a squad of defected SHIELD agents that Tony had brought in as Avengers backup.
"They're too high quality to be Hammer Tech," Tony said. "But I need a closer look to narrow it down any more than that."
"We'll try to leave one in more or less one piece for you,"
Steve promised. The SHIELD squad were barricading the street at both ends to contain the robots. Thor carried Clint to the top of a nearby building, while Steve and Natasha approached the robots at the ground level. Most of the civilians on the street had already run for cover, leaving their empty cars behind.
"Well, this is going to be fun,"
Natasha said dryly. She leapt on top of one of the abandoned cars, shooting her stingers at the nearest robot. Thor began swinging his hammer at every robot that came within reach.
"The noble widow speaks truly,"
Thor agreed with enthusiasm.
"We are trying to keep the damage to a minimum," Tony reminded. "Otherwise, we'd be sicking the Hulk on them."
"I prefer the minimum damage plan," Bruce said. He was hanging back with a line of ex-SHIELD agents, just in case.
"By the way, guys," Clint interrupted, "the robots have flamethrowers."
He was shooting at the robots from his rooftop perch, though his arrow seemed to be having little effect on the thick metal casing that covered the robots, other than making them mad. One of the robots made a blind swipe at Clint, though Clint was several stories out of reach. The robot's metal fist instead dragged through the glass front of the office building Clint was perched on, leaving a massive hole in the side of the building. The workers inside, who had been all but pressing their noses against the glass to watch the fight going on outside, screamed and ran for cover.
"I could short them out if I could just find an opening,"
Clint muttered in frustration.
"Working on it,"
Steve answered, using his shield to wrench a hole in one of the robot's casings. Sam swooped in, catching the attention of the robot that had gone after Clint and leading it away from the already damaged building and right into Tony's repulsor blasts. Before Sam could pick his next target, a woman's scream caught his attention. The floor was tilting dangerously where the robot had smashed into the side of the building, threatening to collapse onto the floor below it. A woman was clinging desperately to a wall support as the floor beneath her tilted and groaned ominously. "I've got the civilian," Sam announced, banking and heading back towards the building.
"Sam? What are you doing?"
Steve asked, as though he'd only just realized Sam was present. Which, to be fair, Sam was flying above the battle while Steve was in the thick of it.
"Getting the civilian," Natasha said. "He literally just said that. Someone needs to get that building fully evacuated."
She had her legs wrapped around the neck joints of one of the robots as she dug a knife into it, and her voice was distinctly impatient. Sam caught the woman just as her grip began to slip and set her down safely on the other side of the barricade. From there, the battle went relatively quickly. Tony applied his repulsor blasts, while Thor went to town with his hammer. Steve and Natasha and Sam worked together to break through the robot's outer casing so that Clint could shoot electrified arrows into their mechanics, effectively frying them. The cleanup took longer than the fight itself had, and by the time they headed back to the tower, the sun was setting. Steve avoided looking at Sam, even as they got into the elevator together, heading for Steve's floor to clean themselves up. The strained silence between them lasted until the elevator doors finally opened and the two of them stepped out into Steve's apartment.
"What the hell were you thinking?" Steve demanded, stopping and crossing his arms over his chest.
"I was thinking, if I'm going to hang out with the Avengers," Sam started, not even dignifying Steve with a look as he unharnessed himself from the wings and set them carefully down on the table.
"Sam!"
Steve's voice bordered on a shout, cutting Sam off.
"Okay, what the hell is your problem?"
Sam's patience snapped as he turned to face Steve, his arms crossed over his chest.
"What exactly did I do to make you think you couldn't trust me to have your back in a fight? Because that's what you're saying right now."
Steve froze, looking dumbfounded.
"I'm not," he protested.
But the fight was draining out of him, and his shoulders slumped, and the protest was weak at best.
"That's not what I meant," he corrected.
"What then?" Sam uncrossed his arms, spreading them in a come-at-me gesture. The words hurt as they left Sam's throat, because this was about more than what had happened with the robots.
"Why don't you want me here?"
"I invited you here." Steve's eyebrows came together in offended confusion. Sam made a frustrated gesture.
"Yeah, you're fine with me here, in the tower, playing games and goofing off. And you're fine with me when I'm in DC, listening to all your problems over the phone."
Sam was working himself into a full steam, finally letting himself acknowledge all the hurt that he'd been hiding, even from himself, since Steve had left him behind in DC. But before he could get any further, Steve cut him off. Steve closed the distance between them in three steps until he was suddenly standing in Sam's personal space. His head ducked just a little so they were eye level. Steve's mouth was pressed into a thin line, and there was an intensity that burned so brightly in his eyes that it was difficult to meet his gaze.
"I want you here," Steve said, very softly and very seriously.
It literally stole Sam's breath. For a moment, Sam forgot everything except Steve and his ridiculously earnest eyes. Sam wasn't entirely sure which of them did the moving, but the space between them had been negligible to begin with, and as soon as their lips touched, it didn't really matter anyway. All too quickly, Steve pulled back, looking apologetic, and it was all Sam could do to resist the urge to chase Steve's lips. Steve still had his cowl on, the cowl that did basically nothing to protect his identity, with its stupid little wings on the sides. And there was basically no blood left in Sam's head, because he had the nearly hysterical urge to laugh. He reached out and pushed back the cowl, revealing the rest of Steve's dirty, sweat-streaked face.
"You're a mess," Sam teased, leaning in close enough to taste Steve's air.
"What do you say we get out of these dirty clothes?" Sam suggested, wiggling an eyebrow. It was worth it to see Steve blush to the roots of his hair. It was even more worth it when Steve bodily picked Sam up and headed for his bedroom.
"Wow," Sam said, laughing as he sprawled across the bed. "That was..." Words failed him, and he just laughed again, filled with the euphoria of a great orgasm. Steve lay quietly beside him, staring at the ceiling, and Sam frowned, leaning up on his elbow so he could get a better look at Steve's face.
"I mean, it was for me," he added.
Steve glanced at Sam, and his mouth twisted into something that looked like a smile, but didn't quite work. No, it was nice, Steve assured.
Nice, Sam repeated.
He narrowed his eyes at Steve. He definitely remembered Steve making noises that had implied a lot more than nice. I don't know if you were just in the same bed I was, but nice is not the word I'd use right now. Steve sat up, running a distracted hand through his ruffled hair.
It's just been a while, he said, not looking at Sam, and the bottom of Sam's stomach dropped out. I should go check in with Tony.
Steve sat on the edge of the bed, his shoulders slumping for a moment, before he pushed himself up and started getting dressed.
Steve, Sam tried, sitting up.
He wanted to reach out to Steve, wanted to pull him back into bed and comfort him somehow. But he didn't. He couldn't. Because Sam wasn't the one Steve needed comfort from.
We still don't know who was behind the attack earlier, Steve said, keeping his back to Sam as he dressed and headed for the door.
We'll have lunch or something before you leave, Steve promised. He paused in the doorway, glancing back at Sam. There was something sad and guilty in Steve's eyes. Sam didn't stop him. He just stared at Steve before heading for the shower.